couple times a week, I learn on the phone with a rabbi who runs a yeshiva in Israel. We've been learning together for many years. And when we finished our charusa, our study session this morning, I said to him, wish me luck, I'm going to be emceeing a big dinner tonight in honor of Rabbi Wine. And he said, Rabbi Wine? The Rabbi Wine? I said, the one and only. He says, you know that I owe my life to him. I said, no, I didn't know that. You owe your life to him? I said, well, what did he do? Did he pull you out of the burning building? He said, close. About 25 years ago, this is him talking, he said, I was in my 20s and I was living in New York doing the Upper West Side Shuffle, and I was kind of interested in my Judaism and kind of not interested in my Judaism. And a friend of mine said, you know, there's these series, these history tapes, you gotta listen to them, this guy Rabbi Wine, they're awesome. And I said to my friend, Jewish history? Are you kidding me? And he said, listen, you know, it's 30 tapes, but you don't have to listen to them all at once. And he said, 30 tapes? You must be kidding. He said, listen, we're friends, right? Listen to one, right? That's not that much of a commitment. 45 minutes, listen to one. He said, all right, I'll listen to one. So he listened to one, and then another, and then five, and then 10, and then all 30 of the tapes on the Second Commonwealth era. He said, while listening to those tapes, he started for the first time in his life asking himself difficult questions about the Torah, about Judaism, about Jewish history, and about his role in Jewish history. And as a result, he decided to go to Israel for a year. That year became another year, and that other year became many, many, many more years. And he said, and I quote, all the Torah that I've taught to my hundreds and hundreds of students, I owe to Rabbi Wine. I am one of his biggest Talmidim, one of his biggest students, even though I've never actually had a face-to-face conversation with him. Now, it's too late to fly him in to give you more details. But Mike Shrieky is here from Toronto. Mike also discovered Rabbi Wine and started listening. And through that listening, he turned around, and his wife Daisy turned around, his life and her life. The Shriekis embody everything that Rabbi Wine could possibly ask for in his listeners. They did not drink the Kool-Aid. They drank the wine. Mike is here tonight to tell you his story. Mike Shrieky.
Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction. Before I begin, for a second, I'd just like to ask three people to stand up, if you don't mind. Elaine Gilbert, where are you? And where's Faggy? Where's Faggy? Faggy? And Brenda as well, if you don't mind. Brenda, where are you? These are the people that run the Destiny Foundation. They're polite every single day. It doesn't matter if I call late one evening. They take the time. They spend all the time that you want on the phone. They get you exactly what you need with courtesy. They're tremendously respectful. And they do you a great service, Rabbi Wein. It's honestly a pleasure to be able to celebrate this occasion with all of you. We share a love and an appreciation for Rabbi Wine. And while it's customary to give gifts to the birthday boy, perhaps we could spend a few moments discussing just some of the gifts that you, Rabbi Wine, have bestowed upon us. We're all affected deeply by how we grow up. Thankfully, I'm blessed with great parents. Having lived in Morocco all their lives, and their ancestors for generations before that, they saw a worsening political situation after the Six-Day War. They made a very difficult decision to leave everyone and everything behind. And when I was a small child, we moved to Toronto, Canada. As my father explains, there was no future for Jewish children in Morocco. My parents came with nothing. They didn't speak the language. They worked incredibly hard and did everything they could to create a great life for us, emphasizing our Jewishness and our education. In fact, when my dad felt that I was underperforming in school, he'd look at me sternly and say, "Mike, is this why we came from Morocco?" It's not an unusual story. We've heard it many times before. Most of us are originally from somewhere else. But as I grew older, my connection to my Jewish roots waned. And for many years, there was a significant distance between how my parents had raised me and who I had become. My job has always required that I do a ton of driving. Being alone in the car, I would listen to the radio, and invariably I would turn it to sports talk. Now, if you live in Toronto, a city that hasn't had a championship in 20 years, it's not funny. Listening to experts drone on about the ills of all our teams can lead to despair. On one such occasion, I drove by the Negev bookstore. I remembered as a child having gone in there a few times to purchase a Hebrew book from school. I couldn't bear to listen to the radio any moment longer, and so I decided on a whim to step into the store. They had a section called audiobooks, and there was a lecture series there by a rabbi. He was a lawyer, a historian, an educator, and as I would later find out, many other things as well. I was curious to hear what a person with this varied a career path had to say. And Rabbi, you told the story of Yoav ben Tzruya, the general in chief of staff of David HaMelech. You described him as a hidden hero, whose contributions, while essential and tremendous, were not well known. You spoke of David HaMelech as a king with political problems, as a father whose heart is broken by his children, and as a holy person that faces the challenges of leading a strong-willed people in turbulent times. Your descriptions were vivid, passionate, and relevant. And all of a sudden for me, the Tanakh had been brought to life and had been connected to the present. It was as if you had gently taken me by the hand and whispered softly, "Let me tell you where you come from. Let me tell you who you come from." I've driven many miles since that day, but not once have I been alone. You have accompanied me and exposed me to the grandeur of our traditions, to the obligations to utilize the great attributes we have been given as a people. You have given me the gift of self-esteem. My wonderful and beautiful wife, who's sitting right over there, began to listen to your lectures as well. Her phenomenal family is also from Morocco originally, but she grew up in France before coming to Toronto. We went out for dinner this past weekend, and she described how growing up as a Jewish girl in France made her feel like an outsider. Though she was surrounded by Jewish tradition through a large, warm, and loving family, the atmosphere in France was such that she felt the need to blend in. We chatted about your lectures. The first one she listened to was dedicated to righteous Gentiles. She then went on, not to the 30-tape lecture series, but to the 5,000 years of history in 5 hours. She expressed how bit by bit and over time, the essence of your message was baking in. And as we were about to leave, she said something amazing. While growing up, she had always known who she wasn't. But you, Rabbi, through your lectures, had taught her who she was. You had given Daisy the gift of identity. And occasionally, this same Daisy will ask me to pick up some groceries on the way home from work. There's a store called Sobeys that has an absolutely fantastic kosher deli section. It's frenetically busy on most days, but on Thursday nights, as people make their purchases for Shabbat, you're really only safe from injury if you're wearing a full set of hockey equipment. On one such Thursday, there I was, jostling for position, when I thought of your lecture on Rabbi Rosenberg. You had described him as a remarkable gentleman who was the head of the OU before you. He had performed wonders in the establishment of kosher products for Jews in North America, a survivor of the Holocaust, whose grace and acumen made him as effective in the boardroom at Procter & Gamble as he was in addressing his fellow rabbis. Rabbi Rosenberg had a custom. On the eve before Chag, he would position himself on a busy street corner in a Jewish neighborhood. He would stand and smile as he saw the rushed anticipation for the holiday. He felt glee that as a people we were rebuilding ourselves. For him, the hustle and bustle meant victory. For that moment, standing in that grocery store being battered around, my stress was replaced by a feeling of serenity and gratitude. We live in a time when we have access to all kinds of kosher products, and there's a traffic jam to purchase them. I've heard you say, Rabbi, that Jerusalem is the only place in the world where you enjoy a traffic jam. The deli section of a grocery store is a far cry from the holy city of Jerusalem. But you should know that you showed me how to find something special there too. You had lifted the veil off everyday life and revealed the underlying holiness. You gave me the gift of perspective. And up until 2 years ago, Daisy, the kids, and I had never been to Israel. So we planned a trip to coincide with our eldest son's bar mitzvah to celebrate the occasion in the Holy Land. It's really an astonishing place. It has everything. Areas that have been unchanged for millennia and others that resemble any thriving metropolis on earth. Yet the overwhelming feeling was one of being at home. For the first time, it really didn't feel as if I was from somewhere else. As our son read from the Torah while wearing his tefillin, I thought about what you have said so many times. Our ancestors would have walked barefoot in the snow across Europe to experience any kind of a state. And here we were, as a family, after 1900 years of exile, celebrating our son's bar mitzvah. What a moment. How could we have understood the significance of the experience without your being there along the way? You have given our family the gift of appreciation. We've all heard the old joke. If you've got two Jews, more than likely you have three opinions. We're quite a diverse group with approaches to life that can vary dramatically. A few days ago, I was walking through a Hasidic community. I saw a father with his talit bag in one hand and his son's hand in the other. He was wearing a magnificent and perfectly circular hat. I didn't know him, and my suspicion is that our backgrounds are very, very different. Perhaps our opinions differ greatly as well. But watching him walk down the street, going home from shul at a leisurely pace with his little boy, I felt warmth towards him. I hope his child will make him proud. Because of you, Rabbi Wein, I know that he and I come from the same place. I feel a kinship with him. I feel a kinship with a person that I've never met. You see, Rabbi, when you went through your varied careers, you were gaining insight. Insight into each of us by walking in our shoes. Insight into all of us by studying our collective past. And by transmitting your experience and knowledge to us, you've become a bridge. You've become the connective tissue across time, geography, backgrounds, and traditions. You have given to all of us as a gift the opportunity for unity. Honestly, Rabbi, we have no idea how you do it. Lectures, articles, Divrei Torah, tours, movies, letters, and no doubt countless other projects. Such endurance, and always with that spark of optimism and humor. Apparently you're a Chicago Cubs fan, so you need to be an optimist and you need a sense of humor. I can relate. I'm a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. But just because we haven't won it this year doesn't mean we won't win it next year. And just because we may have obstacles as a people doesn't mean we can't thrive. And just because our state has challenges today doesn't mean it won't be perfected tomorrow. There's a lesson in everything. By giving us self-esteem, you've given us the strength to try and to endure, even though we may not succeed today. By providing us with the knowledge of our own identity, you have taught us to be strong and stand up for what is right. By bringing to us the gift of perspective, you have allowed us to find the hidden gems in everyday life. By showing us how to appreciate where we've come from, we're able to stay positive while we try to get to where we'd ultimately like to be. And finally, by providing a path to unity, you have taught us that above all things, we have to be kind to one another. I've heard you say, Rabbi, that if a person's grandparents are proud of them, and their grandchildren are also proud of them, then they've accomplished something in life. Please trust us when we say to you, your grandparents and your grandchildren are so proud of you. And as for the rest of us, your adopted family, so to speak, we're proud to call you our teacher and mentor. We're proud and grateful to have you in our lives. Thank you for your gifts, Rabbi Wein, and happy birthday.
For information, please contact the Destiny Foundation at 1-800-499-WINE. That's 1-800-499-9346, or at our 24-hour fax, 845-368-8840. 1528. We can also be reached by email at info@jewishdestiny.com, and you can shop online at www.rabbiwine.com. Due to copyright laws, we kindly request that there be no duplication of this lecture except through the Destiny Foundation.